tell me where my thinking is wrong. I would be very grateful for you if you would help me.
Sure. What's the? I don't even know what issue it is though. So I've been arguing with everybody about different things: the Pentagon, Bernie Sanders, like all kinds of stuff. So I'm not even sure like what you need or disagree with.
I'm sorry. I didn't. Let me put my headphones on. Hang on. I'm sorry. Okay, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, much clearer.
So I said I've been arguing with people on Skype about a whole bunch of different topics. Like, I always argue with Pentagon people, Bernie Sanders people, recently, like, David Duke people. So I don't know which, like, what it is. What's your topic that you want my opinion about?
Well, how many of them did you talk to that had a Juris Doctorate and a Bachelor's?
I don't know. I didn't ask them. Probably not. Well, some of them had Bachelor's degrees, but I doubt they had doctorates. Especially the Bernie Sanders people.
Bernie Sanders people probably have a good heart, but they may be missing some facts. And honestly, just on appearance, Donald Trump is a little bit offensive. I'm sure you understand that, even though you support him.
Well, I reluctantly support him, you know, like...
Absolutely.
As a pragmatist.
I understand. And I'm with you. And if that guy releases those 28 pages,
damn,
I will gladly give him my support. Right.
Did you see what I got from the Justice Department the other day? They destroyed the 76 photos the Israelis took in 2014.
I did not see that, no.
Oh, well, I'm going to make a video about it today, probably. Well, I'm waiting for the Super Tuesday shit to finish, but I got a letter. Oh, God, is this guy dense or what? Sorry. I have... Okay. Anyway, it's some pretty big news. I'll make a video about it. But.
Yeah, this is Super Tuesday, so a lot's going on.
That's why I'm just going to let that pass and then come out with it, because this has been about half my life doing 9/11 research, and I've got this letter from the Department of Justice, and it's saying that, you know, the records that have been responsible for your request were destroyed January 27th, 2014, blah, 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 and all this stuff.
I did see that. I did read that. Yeah, I did.
But I found out where the copies are. They made black and white copies for the full field offices in the police departments in Miami and New Jersey. And the Miami ones are still there. So that is where I'm going to try and go get them. Can you imagine? Like, if I know people have heard the description and everything, but if they got to see the pictures of the dancing Israelis celebrating, that was very powerful.
Absolutely. My feeling is very simple. As long as those 28 pages are not released, our government is committed to lying to us, period. Right? There's no more simpler fact. Until Obama, Congress, I don't care who does it, until somebody releases those 28 pages, our government is committed to lying to us.
Well, we got 22 congressmen to co-sign to get it released, but it wasn't enough. And I couldn't, if I had been able to just stay in D.C. for 3 weeks or something, I think it could have happened, but that's just expensive as fuck. So, but I think Trump may be able to use it as leverage, too. If he doesn't release them, he can hold it over their head. But what's baffling to me is most of Congress... they are allowed to read it, haven't bothered to.
Absolutely. Like they're a bunch of baby boomers, right? They're not gonna bother with it.
If you go to DC, you realize the whole thing's run by little 23-year-old interns and stuff. Like
my fiance lives in Fairfax, right next to DC.
Yeah.
I lived there for a little while. I tried to find a job there, but I couldn't. I'm sure I don't have to tell you, jobs here are extremely scarce.
Yep.
I'm working for Wells Fargo, basically one of the big banks, and I got the job because one of my fraternity brothers is a senior manager in Wells Fargo, so I'm grateful. I go in every day and I give them my IT prowess and experience. They appreciate it. They respect it.
It really is all about who you know, though. Like, even when you have the skills, that doesn't get you hired. Like, you got to know someone.
Absolutely. I was replaced, when I worked for Hewlett Packard, I was replaced by 6 people in Guadalajara. How am I supposed to come? And I had to train them before I left.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. they're on the boycott list from CVS.
I'm not the only one that this has happened to. The H-1B program, you know, the big lie is they bring in skills that nobody else in America can offer. The reality is we have to train them. How in the world does that make sense?
Are you the one that contacted me about that through email?
Probably.
I think I got a couple people telling me to do a story on it. It is a good story, but all this other crap was happening at the time. But yeah, the thing is, I've almost given up like explaining economic issues, because after talking with Sanders supporters, it's like, wow. Even after you say, why would you use tax money to prop up overpriced industries? Like, that's a real simple thing, I think. They just, I don't know. It's in one ear and out the other.
Exactly. I mean, I will listen. I fully expected to talk to you tonight and have you tell me where I was wrong and accept that I was wrong. I was ready to do that, and I signed up for Skype, and I put in my credit card number, and it said, okay, you can wait 24 hours now before you can make a call, so I apologize.
You can Skype. You can add a Skype app on your phone and just go computer to computer for free. You don't have to use the money.
Well,
it's only when you call someone's phone with, like, their phone number that you pay money.
Yeah. I don't want to run up your bill. And again, whatever it costs or whatever you estimate it costs, tell me and I'll double it and send the money to you. I'd be happy to.
It's only like 25 cents a minute or something like that.
I know it's no big deal, but listen, dude, you are disseminating facts. You are disseminating truth. And let me be honest with you. I voted for Bush. Okay? I voted for...
Junior?
Yeah, I did. And you know why? Do you know why?
Tax cut?
Because that was before I had access to the internet and could educate myself properly.
That's the thing. It's. I don't think it's like a lack of intelligence or anything. I think it's a lack of access to information.
Because everything exactly
on TV
right.
says one thing, you're like, well, I guess that's...
Network news, exactly right. Exactly right.
People believe it. I didn't.
So, anyway, again, the upside I see if, and I'm sorry if I interrupted there, but if Trump gets in, I don't care whatever mess he makes, I hope he releases those 28 pages. I hope we see that the Saudis and the Israelis worked in harmony on 9/11. I mean, you thoroughly understand that. I thoroughly understand that.
In the same document, Trump said 9/11 Commission, he's wrong. It was the JIS report.
Yeah.
In the non-redacted portions of that same investigation, they already talk about Saudi money. And yet all those guys, like Omar Bayouni, for example, or Basama Basnan, they're walking around free right now. Even though they were intermediaries for giving money to 2 known hijackers that the CIA had tracked from an Al-Qaeda summit meeting in Malaysia to California. And the only reason we knew that they met Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is because Bradley or Chelsea Manning, whatever you want to call him, leaked it. Not specifically, he just leaked a whole bunch of stuff, but that was in there. And they knew Al-Hazmi and Al-Midhar were living in San Diego. And the Saudis moved right next door to him, helped him get an apartment.
Exactly.
From one guy to another guy, that guy's wife to the hijackers, just like the Israelis did with the police commissioner. He had Ertan Wertheimer give his money to Steve Witkoff, who gave it to Carrick's wife, who gave it to Carrick. Like, that's really suspicious.
it's not even a direct loan or anything, just, oh, all these different mediums for laundering the money around should be a red flag, especially when you're talking about $250,000. That's not like a a favor or something. That's bribery.
Yeah. It's all about power. Bush used his power to classify those 28 pages. Mm-hmm. And in order to unclassify them, somebody has to stick their neck out. Obama is not willing to do it. Nobody in Congress is willing to do it. Or in it, as you say,
a couple did. Like three, at least they brought it up. At least they're like, let's read it. You know, you had Walter Jones and those guys saying, hey. But it took them like 10 years even to discover them. They've been there since 2002. So exactly. Why all of a sudden now you want to read them, right? And I said, we can't even get people to read the rest of the document, though. That's available online, and then you can read all but the... It's more than 28 pages. There's 28 consecutive pages, but there are other pages missing. There's a lot of stuff. Now, why? Why not have transparency? I mean, we know why, but what's the excuse, like, officially? Well, I wonder. But it's not just Trump. Obama supports Assad, which is good. He's willing to work with Putin. He didn't agree with invading Libya. He didn't agree with the coup in Ukraine, so... Assuming he's not lying about any of that. Those are all good things. Could get rid of Common Core. I'm down with that. Fuck Common Core. But he's also pro-torture and doesn't like the Iran deal. He's got a lot of stupid things, too. But compared to the other people, you know, I'm sure he's winning the primaries right now. I haven't had a chance to look at it. But it looked like he was going to win everything but Texas and Minnesota.
Well, if that's on the line not to drag on the call, but did you understand the little blurb I put in the Facebook message to you today that basically at the turn of the century from 1800 to 1900, oligopolies had began to form. Chevron had used trusts in order to form a monopoly, you know, artificially form a monopoly. And they were able to extract monopoly profits at that time. Mm-hmm. And that was when Congress first began to understand that some industries with some kinds of barriers to entry and some kinds of economies of scale basically are capable of consolidating and extracting monopoly profits.
That started with Lincoln in the Civil War with the railroads.
Absolutely. I worked for Union Pacific for 15 years. Absolutely. I understand that. That is correct.
Before oil companies was the railroad industries. Lincoln was a railroad lawyer. And
that
you know,
is
they
correct.
Went west and they butchered the Native Americans and they were connecting a rail line to California. And it was the railroad companies that started all the U.S. transit, roads, canals, everything, bridges they'd ever built have been done by venture capitalists without the state.
Exactly.
And people are like, who would build the roads? I'm like, we build all the roads already without government. But anyway, railroads,
so
that's when you start getting state favoritism and monopolies. This is before antitrust and all.
And do you know how the railroads got that start?
Which you mean?
Before
that?
Because Abraham Lincoln gave them land to build those railroads. That land had a lot of resources under it. That's how they got started. Right? That's how Union Pacific got started in the oil business, basically.
They gave away other people's land, too. Very Israeli.
It was a gift, right? The federal government said, here you go. Southern Pacific and Union Pacific, here you go. Here's a whole bunch of land. Build railroads. That's how it started.
Yep.
A long time ago. But what I have heard, I mean, I've got my bachelor's in economics, and I've studied it for years. And of course, when the internet came online, my resources expanded enormously. And I am thoroughly convinced that it's predicated based on what industry the business is in, but all free market activity trends toward oligopoly over time. And the first ones we saw were railroad, of course.
Well, that's not free market because you're getting state favoritism.
Correct. Power, utilities, water, sewage, utilities.
They basically all benefit from protective regulations by government.
Correct. And that is that free market activity?
No, I mean, if it's government, it's not market.
Exactly. And so and that's been going on for a long time. So what does that tell us about the free market?
Well, that you don't have a free market if you allow the government to act as a giant ATM machine for large corporations.
You're saying that the government did big business a lot of favors, and you are correct when you say that.
I mean, I don't think it's a natural consequence of having a market that it's inevitable that government is going to behave that way.
Okay. So
I think it's specifically our government because of our detachment and political ignorance that allows that.
Cause and effect. You're arguing cause and effect. And I accept that argument. But
because it hasn't happened in every country that has a free market. Like, they're not all acting the same way as America. It was the Civil War that fucked up America. Because there were a lot of people, especially in the South, from Jefferson to Randolph, who were arguing against mercantilism, against this very thing, from Murray Rothbard on. Like, a lot of the Southerners did not like the tariff policies and this regional scapegoating, were very individualist. They had a culture and value system of self-sufficiency and not getting handouts from the government. And they lost the war, though. But about half the country was philosophically opposed to that. And you had, like, John Calhoun from South Carolina talk about nullification, saying we didn't hear the results. And they knew exactly what the government was doing. And they knew exactly how they're using the tariff policy to benefit northern industries. And they didn't want that. So it wasn't inevitable. It was just, it's what actually happened because the North won the war. But it wasn't like a natural outgrowth of free markets. It could have gone the other way. And it was going the other way for over half the country.
You're talking about public opinion.
And the Congress, too. Like, the vice president is the one that created nullification. And they seceded from the union. It was so bad, they left. They said, your tax policies and your policies of protectionism and mercantilism, they disagreed with it so strongly that they left the union and started a confederation. And the paint they put on it is, oh, slavery, this and that, which is bullshit, because 5 northern states had slaves, and Lincoln, during secession, personally wrote the governors of all the states, and they had a constitutional amendment which forbid interfering with labor, which included slavery. It was called the McCollum Memo, and they all rejected it because that didn't matter whether they could keep their slaves or not. They were still going to secede from the Union because you had 25% of the population paying 80% of the taxes. And the taxes were specifically recycled only in these small circles of northern industries and not going back to, public works or anything that would benefit the people. And they saw this. There was this fight was going on from, like, the 1820s to 1860. They were having this big battle. I mean, South Carolina tried to secede twice. Texas tried to secede. The Northeast tried to secede. They were barely holding their shit together. And so that was the long fight. Andrew Jackson was big against it. When they had a Southern president, things would calm down. Jefferson killed the bank too, another Southern president. When these Yankees got in, they have a completely different set of cultural values. And their values were mercantilism, protectionism. And they won. The bankers won. But you could see this fight all the way back between Jefferson and Hamilton. And, like, the Illuminati, the actual one, the Freemasons of all the Virginians, basically, Madison and all these guys, they wanted the Rothschilds out. They wanted central banking out. They didn't agree with usury. They said it was such a burden on the people. These are the guys that wrote the Constitution, Jefferson and Madison. So there's no interpreting it one way or another. They wrote the damn thing. But Hamilton's faction continued on, and they had the Tariff of Abomination, and they were fighting and fighting and fighting. And by the Civil War, that was the time. Because when the Union won the Civil War, that's when the mercantilists completed their capture of government, and you've never had separation of business and state since. And then by 1913, of course, it got worse. They reinstituted the central bank. But
right.
That was that's what the Civil War was really fought about.
I mean, you feel you give another perspective to what I understand about history, and it fits perfectly. I appreciate it.
I did a really long talk on the Civil War, and we went over that with this guy, Kelly something. Anyway, he's from Virginia. I'll send it to you. It's an hour, but it's like a wealth of information. Because, you know, nowadays people, our current culture is so obsessed with, you know, sex and race and shit like that, that, you know, World War II was to free the Jews, and the Civil War was to free the slaves, and we're going to Afghanistan for women's lib. There's always some humanitarian facade to explain our actions, and we didn't give a fuck in World War II about that, like, or the Civil War. That's not why any of it. Treaty of Versailles started World War II, I think. But yeah, the history.
Think about World War, the time, the 1930s and 40s. Think about that time. There was no internet. And there was only things that people could see on billboards and on newspapers. And the government was putting ads out there, inducing people to donate money, to buy war bonds, mm-hmm. to, you know, do other things, that demonizing Germany, demonizing our enemies.
And the U.S. had been occupying most of Latin America. I mean, they had invaded, by 1934, almost every country south of Mexico. The colonialism of the Indian Wars just turned south and started going into Cuba and Nicaragua and Honduras. They're setting up puppet governments. And that's when they created the New York Federal Reserve, was in 1934.
Right.
And which makes it even, I mean, it's another layer. It gets worse and worse, but that's when Hitler was voted chancellor, too. But it all coalesces, but these kind of simplistic answers we get, like slavery, we just wanted to free Poles or something, it's nonsense. It's like schoolbook BS history you tell children, you know. But the economic complexities aren't, you know, you can't really teach a second grader that stuff. But that, and, you know, just tell them they'll know when they're older or something. Don't give them a fairy tale. Because some people never leave the fairy tale. I mean, there are a lot of people who really view both world wars as like clear good guys and bad guys type of thing. No gray onions.
Oh, it's the way I was raised. I was raised to believe that anything liberal was evil. Anything that was conservative was good. Mm-hmm. And although sometimes that works, it's the wrong way to approach global
power.
It's
the Star Wars view of the world. Evil and good.
Exactly.
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe, yeah. Superman. Right.
Air Cobra.
Anyway, Ryan, I'll let you get off the phone. I don't want you to run up your bill. Again,
let me send you that Civil War talk, because it goes over in more detail what I was saying. And you can look around the world and see that, you know, in Iceland, even in Japan in some regards, like there are some really large countries where the market really does benefit the people. And even with all the fuckery and corporatism the U.S. has had, the capitalism and market system has brought far more people out of poverty than it's put into it. Because
no.
You look at other systems.
And let me interrupt you. If you were on the phone with Karl Marx right now, he would agree with you.
Probably.
He was a very smart guy. I'm not a Marxist, but if you actually go in and read what the guy had to say, he said capitalism develops an industrialized nation faster and more efficiently than anything else. He was absolutely committed to that. But he said as it grows older, workers begin to get screwed.
They start getting alienated. And, but what I would argue is, and I mean, I wrote a book called The Separation of Business and State, that we need capitalism and markets. And we need to get the state out of it. And, you know, the
the regulations that are being made, which I don't think Congress even read half the time. We know how we know everybody knows corporations lobby for favoritism. Like, we get that.
Sure.
I mean, that's why we need libertarians, because they philosophically are opposed to engaging in that kind of activity.
Okay, so this is what I was hoping for, because this is the little teeny tiny piece in ideological theory where I disagree with you. When you take a shower in the morning, you get public water. That public water comes from a regulated utility. If that utility were at liberty to charge you whatever it wanted, that would exceed your rent or your mortgage or whatever. If you went to the bathroom and flushed the toilet, and, you know, would you really want to choose the most cost-effective sewer line to use at that point? No, nobody wants to do that. They want a utility, right? They want it to just happen, and they want it to be at a reasonable cost. And the only entity around that's big enough and powerful enough to make sure that that comes at a reasonable cost and a reasonable quality is a government of some kind.
Yeah, but libertarianism is not anarchy. It's talking about getting rid of corporate bribery. Like when something's not a utility and it is a private company, like Lockheed Martin or something, they should not be getting trillions of dollars. No bid contracts.
I'm with you, but do you agree that government or at least regulation?
I'm not anti-regulation. I'm anti-bad regulations. That's the thing. Like, people get stuck in this paradigm of regulation or deregulation, and I am not one of those people. I'm like, well, which regulation? You know, it's a case-by-case thing. It's silly and crass to just be like automatically against or automatically for something, I think. And that's the problem, is you get all these people who are like pro regulations based on some good ones like Glass-Steagall or what, you know, name a good regulation, whatever. But then they ignore all the horrible ones that are, you know, preventing you from shopping across state lines for insurance, for example, which drives up the price and so on. So, and then you have people who will point to the bad regulations and ignore all the good ones. Right?
Correct.
So they'll point.
Can I give you a teeny little example? A real life example.
Sure.
When I worked for Hewlett Packard in the Sacramento area, my electric bill was around $800 a month. The people that lived in the town just a few miles south of me, their electric bill was around $400 a month. It was Roseville Electric. And I could not understand why is it, I mean, yeah, my house is a little bit bigger, but why is it that their electricity is half as much as ours? And I found out the bottom line is they were operated by Roseville Electric, a little teeny tiny power company, and I was serviced by PG&E. Why is it that PG&E was able to charge me double what Roseville Electric was able to charge those people? And the answer is
market competition.
I'm sorry?
Like, you couldn't go and say, I would like Roseville to do my electricity.
There was no competition. Exactly. You could only buy from, right.
When there's no market competition, then you've got a monopoly. They'll charge as high as the market will bear.
What you say is correct, but why is it that Roseville Electric charged half of what PG&E charged?
Probably they had someone else in that area to compete with.
No, the reality is PG&E.
I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing it's your example, so you just tell me.
But PG&E has powerful lobbyists, powerful attorneys. They go through a semi-annual process where they ask for rate increases. They justify it with costs. They, you know, put a lot of energy, a lot of effort into winning those court battles and winning the higher rates. Little Roseville Electric doesn't have those resources. So they go to their courts and they say, can we have a little bit more money? And, you know, it's a much more modest increase. It's all about arguing power. Basically,
Well, it's arguing power that's distributed by a government because the court system is the state. And they shouldn't be in charge of that. It ought to be, if it's free, Rose Hill should be able to move into your area and say, oh, you're paying $800? Well, we can give you electricity for $500 or $400. And then you switch companies. But I guarantee you're saying that they're protected. I bet you they're not allowed to go into the area. But who makes that protection? The government.
You are correctly arguing that there should be competition, but with electrical power, who services what house is not competitive, at least in those places. It isn't yet. There is no competition.
I would like to see, and I don't know, but I would guess that sometimes, most of the time, lack of competition is because they can't get contracts or rights to even enter and offer their service within a certain area. Because the established companies are using the power of government to block them.
Could be. I don't have these
because
facts.
I don't know what it is, if that is the case, but I had a friend from New York, and he went to college with me. He actually didn't finish, but he went out and he was working for deregulation. And this is when I first came out. I was like, what do you mean deregulation? What do you mean regulation? He's like, no. We come in and deregulate, and it lowers everybody's utility bills. I'm like, why? Why would that? Don't you need regulations to keep them from raising the price? And like, no, it's actually the opposite. They're able to raise the price because of the regulations. And he explained the whole thing. By deregulating, it gives you more options, you know, who you want to choose for your cable or whatever your utility is. And instead of having, like, only Cox or only whoever it is in the one area, and these companies work in collusion too. Like there is an area where, you know, everyone's Charter and one Cox, and there's another area that's all Cox and one Charter. They'll actually swap territories so that they can have a nice balloon where there's no competition. So it's not only just government, it's the companies too. Well, this is illegal though. You're not supposed to have cartels. So at least there's the risk when they do this of getting in trouble, but where they'll actually swap territories and go, well, it's enough. You got one in our area, and we got one in yours, and we'll just trade these, and then they can raise the price because there's no market competition. But there's always an able, like Rothbard said, a trust buster that can come in and undermine it. It's harder. The more complicated industry is, the harder it is, because it's very easy to open up a new burger joint or a new clothing store or something like that. It's harder to open a utility company or a power plant or something. You know, so you got to have a lot of capital. So it happens slower. But no one's arguing that it's utopian or anything. We're just saying this is the better alternative than the assured government monopoly. And it does work. I mean, look what happened to cell phones, right? You remember when that was all regional and you had roaming minutes and all this shit? And when they deregulated, boom, prices drop, prices of phone drop, phone plans drop. You no longer even pay for long distance calls. Like, they had a war. You know, all these phone companies are like, we'll give you unlimited long distance for $29. That was a thing for a long time. You had Sprint and AT&T and so on. And so you can see it happen in certain industries, even complicated things. You know, you got to have telephone lines. You got to have shit set up. You got to have cell towers. Those are big businesses. And yet the price definitely dropped when they deregulated and got
roaming and stuff. You definitely understand price drops because of competition.
Right. But competition you couldn't have competition until you got rid of the protective regulatory statutes.
Well, okay.
And so, I'm not saying regulation's automatically bad. I'm saying most of the regulations that we actually have are, as you said, written by lobbyists to the benefit those with the resources to lobby.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah. But I think if you are of a libertarian philosophy in government, you're going to, no, I'm not rewarding the company. The company can make money by selling products. They're not getting shit from government, and they're not getting protection from government. You know, the best thing for the consumer is to allow market competition. I mean, I would say I'm not so far out there to say, like, get rid of copyright and stuff. I believe in intellectual property because I think it actually motivates innovation. But I also think there's intellectual property abuse. I think there's patent abuse where drug companies don't actually change anything, you know, just very minor, and they get an extended patent
which actually correct. Also prevents competition because
correct
you sure. don't get generics and so on. So there's both. But again, that nuanced position, everyone's either or. It's binary thinking. They're like, oh, get rid of intellectual property because it protects, you know, drug companies and blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, but then what about someone like me? I mean, spend years of my life and make a movie and everyone just pirates the hell out of it. Like, it's okay. Or the MicroWire case, I don't know if you've been following that. It's you don't want to end up like China, right? It's good to have intellectual property, but it can't be forever. It's got to be reasonable. And you got to get rid of abuses, correct. But don't throw the baby out correct. With the bathwater. And that's what I see people doing is they're all coming down on like, they're always deregulate or they're always regulate. They're always this or always that. And not looking at it on a case by case basis. Everyone's looking for like a formula. Like, oh, I'm an X, you know, I'm a libertarian. I'm a this, like that. Like they have all these automated positions because of their title. And I'm like, well, tell me the issue and I'll tell you my stance on it. And it's going to differ all the time. It depends on the case. And I know it's a shortcut in thinking to go, well, I have a formula, but that's just stupid. It's the real world. You can't have like a formula that solves all problems. You have to look at it individually and see what would do work best. That's it. You just got to think for yourself.
Ryan, it reminds me of second year law school and constitutional law. And they teach you that in normal cases where you have to balance benefits to society and infringements on, you know, it's First or Second Amendment laws or whatever, you always use a balancing equation. And there's various ways that they go through that in order to, and this is the way basically the courts have instructed attorneys to make these arguments, to balance the benefits to society versus the infringements on constitutional rights. Very similar are the things you're talking about.
Yeah, I will grasp it so. But I do the best I can. I wrote a book about what I think are problems across the board in healthcare and education and all of that. I explained all my positions, so they're all out there. And I definitely make enough videos about foreign policy and stuff, as you know. And I've been getting into history stuff too, because that's my bread and butter. And I didn't know what people didn't know, so I started getting into
my girlfriend in Virginia works she works for Booz Allen as a consultant. Basically, she's got her master's in public administration. She after years of being an RN, years of counseling. The government basically on how to manage healthcare. She is absolutely committed to a single payer system. She says there are so many doctors and so many insurance executives that are sucking so much money out of insurance premiums. It's never going to be resolved until those people are booted out, basically is what
she's taking a feeling. Realistic approach. I mean, because again, there government regulation, like with Medicaid, they actually made it so that they can't negotiate down the prices for procedures and drugs. And then, you know, people on it don't care because they're not paying, the government's paying. So it ends up costing a lot more, but then that pushes the price up for everybody that doesn't qualify for Medicaid, who do have to pay out of pocket or sure. has to pay. It makes it more sure. expensive. And that whether it's single payer or not, I always say, it's really irrelevant how much whatever ratio you play around with versus out of pocket or government or employer. If you don't change the total cost, it's too expensive. No matter in every single combination, it's going to be too expensive. And you look at just compared to cost of procedures, like with Japan and the US, Japan's not some third world country either. So it's not like the dollar is worth more or anything like that. It's like, I tore my hamstring in the U.S. and I had insurance. And the total cost, even though my insurance paid for most of it, was $600 just to go get an x-ray, crutches, and pills. I retore same muscle, same leg in Japan, $24. And then the insurance paid for 70% of that. You know, so, like, if, even if
even if I didn't have universal health care, if they're like, you got to pay completely out of pocket with no insurance, I'm like, here, it's $24, no big deal. But you know what I'm saying? Like, the underlying problem is the total cost. And you get all these people yipping about how they're going to pay for it. Oh, we'll raise taxes. Oh, we'll have government. Dude, if you don't negotiate down the cost and look at why it costs so much in the first place, you're starting the story in the middle, which people are often guilty of. Same with education. Like, college wasn't always so expensive. If you, instead of raising taxes to prop up an overpriced industry, why don't you ask, why is college so expensive? Oh, guaranteed government student loans. Yeah. The Department of Education has made $127 billion in profit off of student loans, and these people want to keep the Department of Ed. I'm like, get rid of the Department of Ed and get rid of guaranteed student loans, and the price will drop overnight. But they never ask, why is it expensive? They go around and look about how they can pay for it by raising taxes and payroll or whatever, instead of saying, well, why does it cost so much?
Yeah.
And this, that's the same thing.
And again, my girlfriend who's in this business, she says all the money's going to high-paid insurance executives and extremely high-paid surgeons and physicians.
And she also, those people and also are, in mental health, the drug industries.
And the drug industry, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, but especially agree with all of them.
Especially like antidepressants, huge industry.
And how do we introduce competition to these areas of people who are exploiting the system? How do we introduce them?
Well, we used to have it until about the mid-50s. Like, that's the problem. Is, and the same with education. Before we had a Department of Education, all that, it wasn't so screwed up. But like, there's a whole bunch of little steps you'd have to take. Like, one, you should be able to shop across state lines for insurance, period. Like, get rid of that regulation, and that would cause more market competition. But I don't even know if insurance is the way to go. I mean, imagine, like, John Stossel did a piece, you know.
You hit the nail on the head. I completely agree with you. Is insurance coverage the way to fund?
It depends if you're asking me. Do you want to wave a magic wand and get what you want, or practically? And like, practically, I think you could do what I just said. But if I ultimately had my say, I wouldn't even deal with insurance at all. That's like, if I had insurance for the grocery market.
Completely agree.
I'd have steak every day, right? Like, the government's paying, I'm going to have all steaks then. Why not? Why should I bother caring what it costs or shopping to find something cheaper? Like, there's no incentive. If the consumer is not engaged as an active participant in the market competition, then there is no market competition.
Right. You are correct.
And so if you're like, well, it doesn't matter because it's not my money, then they don't shop around. They don't go to different doctors or whatever. Now, I know emergency procedures are like the one exception, but look at all the other stuff that you could have competition on.
You know, my girlfriend used to be an RN, and they have a thing called a crash cart. It's the cart that nurses cart around, and it's got medicine on it. And some of, she tells me some of, and it's a well-known fact, some of the medicine they have on those carts is well beyond the expiration date. It's expired, but the hospital will not pay to keep those pills up to date. So they are giving expired medicine to patients because it's the best thing they can do, and the hospital won't pay for it. We obviously have problems. We have huge problems in our.
I think that's part and parcel with the drugs costing so much, and that again goes to many things: the patents, overextensions, and lack of competition for that.
And I would say you're mostly right, but even if it was 10 cents more, hospitals, unless they were acquired, unless somebody was overseeing what's on those crash carts, would choose the lesser expensive option.
I think someone is supposed to be overseeing that, though, aren't they? Not having medicine.
Anyway, it's getting late here, Ryan. I appreciate the time you spent. I hope we can do a Skype. I would kind of like to. And I'm sorry, I just signed up for it tonight, and they said you got to wait 24 hours. So Maybe we can do it later in the week or next week.
Do you want to have your conversation public or private? Because people might benefit from the. It was a nice talk. Like I rarely get.
Do you think I add enough to the exchange to where it might help people?
Yes, because I think the question you had in the beginning, especially like, isn't it an inevitable consequence of markets that are going to lead to oligopolies, right? That's a really good question. And I went specifically into history as showing that what I think anyway. I think so.
I'm sorry, you think what? I'm sorry?
I think it was definitely well worth it, especially the question in the beginning about markets leading to oligopolies.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty well... I mean, it's not all industries, but many industries.
The bigger they are, the more tendency toward that. Like, the more complicated it gets, like, it's hard to compete with the space program, right?
I mean, there's two dimensions, barriers to entry and economies of scale. Right. Those are the two things that enable monopoly power or oligopoly power.
It's always a bit of both. But what it is, we can fix the state portion of it, and I'm a pragmatist, so.
So I hope we can have a Skype, and I hope we can do it later this week or next week. And I really appreciate your time, Ryan. You're doing great work.
Thank you.
I support you.
I will have that 9/11 stuff up later, and I just did a 3-hour interview. We ended up talking about JFK for more than I've ever talked about it. That's up right now. It's on the Ripple Effect podcast, if you Google that.
Yeah.
If you're into that.
You're helping a lot of people. It kind of eats on me that you do your woodshed stuff, because even Bernie, although he's made some mistakes, hey, I just told you, I voted for Bush.
Right.
I made mistakes too. We all make mistakes.
Those kids need to know how bad some of his policies are. I mean, he just had a rant about anti-vaxxer stuff, like whatever. But I'm like, didn't you sign off on sanctions that killed 500,000 children? Like, shut the fuck up. What a hypocrite.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care.
Exactly.
Jackson song. You know, like, they don't care about us. Like, it's true. They don't care about you. I think George Carlin did that. He said, if they don't give a F about you, they don't give an F about you.
They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all.
I miss him.
Anyway, Ryan.
Great guy.
I'm here. I've got to go to bed. So okay. I appreciate your time.